This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN is on the clock for the second annual Pro Football Futures Draft. 13 VSiN hosts and guests face off in a fantasy football-style snake draft hosted by Dustin Sweetelson, and every pick doubles as a handicapping breakdown. You can use win totals, division winners, player props, and stat leaders. Last year's competitors are all back for round two, joined by three newcomers stepping into the Futures Draft room for the first time. Former wide receiver Keyshawn Johnson, comedian and sports commentator Nick Bakay, and the guru John Hansen. Don't just watch the Futures Draft, profit from it. Tune in Thursday, August 20th, 5 p.m. Eastern, only on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this or not, but I'm going to say it at the risk of getting in trouble. I believe myself, Stormy Bonatoni, Tim Murray, Matt Humans, we will be broadcasting from our Canada for this bad boy. So if our boss, Steve Cohen, is watching, consider this my ask. Can I have a Labatt Blue as the show goes along? That is my ask, because we'll be there. I mean, come on, win in Rome, right? Anyway, with that, training camp tour rolls on. Our team today, it's Green Bay Packers.
Join Stormy and JBT as they go on the Money Moves NFL training camp tour.
The sky might be falling out there in Wisconsin. I don't know if that's truly the case. 9-7-1 a season ago. 9.5 the win total over -130. Division win total 3.5 shaded to the under at -160. If you think the Green Bay Packers can surprise us all, get the most wins in the National Football League, you're getting 17-1. Fewest wins at 140-1. Slightly favored to make the playoffs at -146. Odds to win the NFC North +225. Odds to win the NFC at 9-1. Super Bowl at 18-1. Your most likely Super Bowl, or excuse me, MVP candidate, Jordan Love, at 20-1. Comeback player of the year is an interesting one for Micah Parsons at 14, and then Matt LaFleur at 30-1. Some of the key additions for Green Bay in the offseason: defensive tackle Jason Hargrave, quarterback Benjamin St. Juste, Zaire Franklin, former Indianapolis Colt, comes in via trade. Sean Ryan comes in at center as well. But some of the losses for him, they're pretty big. Rasheed Walker at tackle, Romeo Dubs, a wide receiver, Malik Willis, who had to play some games over the last two seasons, is gone to Miami. Rashawn Gary gone into trade with Dallas. Quay Walker out the door as well. Doesn't seem to be a wildly impactful draft class. We'll see what second-round corner Brandon Cisse has to say about that. And maybe our dude Trey Smack at the back end of the sixth round for the Green Bay Packers. But he's a kicker. Either way, I think a lot of what the Green Bay Packers have in store for us in 2026 starts with the NFL defense. Because of the teams in the NFL, this is one that I think is going to be the most volatile as the season moves along. Micah Parsons, for those who don't know, is on the PUP list. He's going to miss the first month of the season. Told the media that mid-October is going to be the target date for his return. Quote, "That's the most optimistic return date that I can be back. Of course, I could be later. There could be setbacks." Very realistic way to view this thing for Parsons, but the assumption is you're going to be in that range. A lot of people have pointed to week 6 against the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. Narratively, of course, I would assume that Parsons is definitely shooting for that moment, that be the case. But either way, in that area is where you expect Parsons to come back, which, by the way, side note on this, because he is 14-1 to win comeback player of the year. And while I understand that might be tempting, I think you'll wait, right? Because he could come back and be very, very dominant, but that also gives the other contenders for comeback player of the year about 5 weeks of runway, 6 weeks of runway to stack up statistics, move up in the odds board, whatever it is. So while it makes sense that at 14-1, you're going to be there, you're already behind the eight ball if you're Parsons. So maybe just sit back and wait and get some longer odds to see if that's going to be the case instead of doing it now. Because I would assume his odds aren't going to get better if he's missing the first five weeks of the season for comeback player of the year, but definitely worth noting there. But we start with this team, because in 13 games with Parsons, they played really well in 2025. Packers recorded 34 sacks, 61 tackles for loss, 84 quarterback hits. In the three games without him, though, Green Bay failed to register a single sack, 7 tackles for loss, and 11 quarterback hits. They overall finished 22nd in opponent expected points added per play, 22nd in opponent success rate. I think the biggest question is, in these first 5 weeks, 6 weeks of the NFL season without Parsons, where in the world does this pass rush come from? Rashawn Gary traded to the Cowboys, second on the team in total pressures last year at 60. The third on the team in total pressures last year was Carl Brooks at 29. Think about that drop-off. Gary goes 60, and then your third leading pressure getter, 29. I don't know where these pressures are going to come from outside of Micah Parsons, and that's a really big deal. We just talked about this a little bit earlier in the program when it came to the Atlanta Falcons and the injuries and other issues, suspensions, that they have run into with their edge rusher position with Josh Kendall for The Athletic. And the fact that your secondary really does need to hold up if you're not getting any pass rush, because less pressure means more time for your quarterbacks. So that's going to be a really big problem for Green Bay. Is the back end of this defense going to be able to withstand the absence of Micah Parsons as you wait for him to return? You're probably going to take a step back. You're probably not going to be as effective. And then you get to the offense. And the question, too, is what should the expectations be for the offense? It's pretty fascinating. Green Bay last year, fourth in expected points added per play, fifth in success rate. And so you're thinking, well, they're fine. Why are you worried about this? Well, it's because of that guy right there, Jordan Love, who might be one of the more underrated quarterbacks in the National Football League. All of their success, I'll say all of it, was due to this offense. They were third in expected points added per pass a season ago. They were 18th in expected points added per rush. And you really have to wonder if this rushing attack is going to be any better considering what we know about the offensive line, considering what we know about Josh Jacobs. He's dealing with a groin injury already. He also has a potential suspension looming and doing to be being arrested in May and booked on several domestic violence charges. There was a slew of suspensions that were handed out by the NFL in the last couple of days, but he was not amongst them. So you're still waiting to see whether or not he is going to be effective or to be affected. And by the way, he was not effective in 2025, or at least to the level that we know, especially his first year in Green Bay. Ran for just 984 yards, averaged less than 4 yards per attempt, averaged 3 yards flat per carry after contact. So not as effective in terms of the physicality as a runner. And by the way time works, you only get older. So Josh Jacobs at a position that has immense physicality, who got a little bit worse last year, I don't know what that effectiveness is going to be. And the Packers running back depth chart, really not particularly great. So is this going to be another year in which this balance or this offense lacks balance, where they're going to rely on the explosivity of this passing attack and Jordan Love? And while I do think Love is very good, you do have to be a little worried because, yes, Love ran for 3,700, or excuse me, passed for 3,700 yards, threw for 27 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. He was second in EPA per play among quarterbacks. Turnover with the play rate was better last year at 2.6%, but a potentially weaker wide receiver room could be a slight problem. Romeo Dubs is gone. I think you question whether or not investing in Christian Watson is the way to go. He played in just 10 games last season, 10 or fewer in two of the last three seasons. Most played in the year 2024, it was 15, so maybe that's going to be the case as we move forward. You never want to assume injury, but it's been part of Watson's story up to this point. Matthew Golden is solid. He had 46 targets last year. And then, of course, Tucker Kraft coming off the ACL injury. That is, I think, going to be a slight question. Was just cleared for 11-on-11 drills, but is he going to hit the ground running right away? I think that's going to be a question. Maybe by the end of the year, you're going to be fine. But that's all, right? All of this comes together at the beginning of the season. It's Micah Parsons coming back. It's Tucker Kraft coming back. You have a lot of serious issues injury-wise that guys have to ramp up and be better. So maybe by the end of the year, they're going to be effective. But do you get off to a slow start? Is there going to be a problem? And it leads to this. Brandon Kravitz was on Prop Points earlier this summer. It was July 30th. But I've kind of thought of, like, listening to some of the analysis around Green Bay before I got into the team preview, that maybe we were doing a little sky is falling chicken little stuff with this team, that they were going to be fine. But diving into it a little bit more, I can understand why you would think that you're a little down on this team. Kravitz is really down on this team, saying his favorite best bet, Green Bay, finishing last in the NFC North. Take a listen.
Can I sell you on my favorite last place bet is in the NFC North, and it's the Green Bay Packers at plus 355. I think they could be in real trouble this year. They carry a 5-game losing streak into the season, perfectly coinciding with the loss of Micah Parsons. They were outscored 130-73 without Micah Parsons in the lineup. Their defensive coordinator is now the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Their O-line is in shambles, bottom 10 in the NFL. I'm high on the Lions. You and I, lockstep, big on the Vikings this year. I think they're a good long shot divisional bet. And while I expect the Bears to take a step back, I still think they're better in a lot of areas if you go tail of the tape with the Green Bay Packers. So when you get plus 355 on Green Bay, I am very interested in that number.
Yeah, it might seem alarmist, but I do think it's a situation where you're looking at Green Bay. And in this division in general, as you kind of see the win totals there, right? An 8-win season for Green Bay is perfectly plausible, and that could be last in the NFC North. We'll talk about the Minnesota Vikings at our next stop for the training camp tour, so we won't give too much away. But again, you know, I have questions about the quarterback development, KOC, all that kind of stuff. But if the Vikings are what everybody expects them to be, if Kyler Murray is going to be this comeback player of the year candidate, if they're going to be that good, that's going to be something in which realistically they could finish last. Green Bay, their schedule, 8th hardest in the National Football League. And maybe this is the balancing act that you're talking about. When you look at the schedule at the front end, Vikings, winnable game. At the Jets, obviously extremely winnable. Home versus the Falcons, potentially winnable. At the Buccaneers, it starts to ramp up versus the Bears. But if you can navigate those first four games, come out with potentially one loss, maybe none. It's a possibility. Getting Parsons back and having Kraft be fully healthy and ready to go, I think that you're maybe looking at the positive upside of Green Bay. But I think for the most part, you see a total of win total of 9.5, slightly shaded to the over at -130. Given what we know about this team defensively, where this pass rush is going to come from, all of these sort of things, I do lean a little bit in terms of this under for 9.5 in Green Bay. I just think that at 9 wins seems like a perfectly priced and adequate season for Green Bay, given some of the issues they've had. I know that there has been talk of LaFleur kind of revamping this offense, changing what they've been doing, maybe from a play calling standpoint. There have been notes out there. I think it was Kimes who put this out, Mina Kimes, ESPN, about the rush rate over expected on her podcast about the fact that this team runs way more than you probably should. And so maybe they're going to open this thing up and allow Jordan Love to do some things with this wide receiver room. And we'll have a new look offense that's going to change things for the way we project Green Bay. But I do think that there is a chance that this team is exactly what the win total says it is and what it was a season ago, a 9-win team. And 9 can still get you to the playoffs. We don't know what the NFC is going to look like on the back end, but Green Bay for this team, 9 seems pretty strong. And again, if there's any futures bet to be made, I can totally get down with Micah Parsons to win comeback player of the year. But I don't know if at 14-1 before the season begins and knowing he's going to be on the PUP list here and miss the first 4 months or 4 weeks, excuse me, at the very least, that it's the best time to invest in him right now. And maybe it's better to sit back and wait. If he can hit the ground running right away, maybe it's Sunday night against the Dallas Cowboys, maybe you're going to get a little bit more bang for your buck in that regard. So tomorrow, we'll have the Minnesota Vikings looking forward to that. Stormy will be back as well. So we'll get some dueling thoughts on there because I do think she's a little bit higher. I don't want to put words in her mouth, but a little bit higher in Minnesota KOC and Kyler Murray than I am. When we come back, though, let's check in with Patrick Everson. We have a lot to get to with Patrick Everson from Vegas Insider, including the Premier League starts this weekend. Very excited for that. But we also have a lot of NFL futures and more to get to with Patrick when we return.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, we are getting closer and closer and closer to the best time of the year. And I'm not talking about just football because we have a lot going on in the sports world. Once we start to get to fall, we have football, and then we have more football. I'm talking about, of course, soccer. We also have basketball and more. Let's get into a ton of it. Patrick Everson is with us, Vegas Insider, covers the industry from tip to tail. We'll have a lot of insight from these books from Patrick when it comes to what they're looking at from a futures perspective. Patrick, it's good to talk to you, sir. Let's start with some NFL win totals, if we could, because this is pretty interesting. We were actually just talking about the Green Bay Packers and their win total set at 9.5. Maybe that's one that sticks out over at BetMGM, but what were some of the notable win total action that you saw and heard from BetMGM when it came to those?
All right. Well, first off, thanks a lot for having me on. Definitely appreciate it. And let me slide over to my win totals betting odds. Just updated this over the last few days at Vegas Insider. And these are some numbers from BetMGM. And you mentioned it. I enjoyed that last segment. That was interesting talking some of the win totals and especially that those thoughts on the Packers maybe finishing last in the division. I mean, it's a hell of a division. You got to admit that. So at BetMGM, I think a couple things kind of stood out. One, at least at the moment, and this is obviously subject to change. These things can change on the fly. But they didn't have any team open at more than 10.5 wins. And that was, you know, several months ago when they first put these up, John. And now they've only got two that have reached 11.5 so far. One of them, it's not going to surprise you at all, the Los Angeles Rams with, you know, the offseason acquisition of Myles Garrett, among other things, and the Rams also being the favorite to win the Super Bowl. And then the other is the Ravens, who went from 10.5 up to 11.5. And with both those, they were, you know, shaded solidly to the over at 10.5, and now they're shaded to the under at I take that back. The Ravens are still shaded to the under, though, at 11.5, -140. The Rams went from 10.5 over -140 to 11.5 over -140. So the 11.5, actually a favorite at BetMGM on the Rams. I thought that was kind of interesting. As far as kind of who's up and who's down, I think certainly one team that will stand out here among the local listeners here in Vegas. I realize you've got a national show here, but the Las Vegas Raiders, they are one of the top three over bets in terms of ticket count at BetMGM. And they were hitting the Raiders at 5.5. And I'm pretty sure the Raiders are up to 6.5 at BetMGM now. Number one in over bets is the Giants, over 7.5. And then my Denver Broncos at over 9.5, which, you know, I'm not the eternal pessimist, but I'm also not the super optimist on my Broncos. I think it's there's going to be some regression to the mean this season. And but hopefully 10 wins is still there. And then the top three in over money, in order, the Vikings, the Broncos, and the Lions. The Vikings are at 8.5 wins, Broncos 9.5, Lions 10.5. And then the under, Dolphins, Patriots, Packers. And you alluded to the – I mean, you just had this discussion on the Packers, so it's a nice coincidence that it comes up here, John. But Dolphins under 4.5, Patriots under 9.5, Packers under 10.5. And then the top three in under money – I think interesting as well. Cardinals 4.5 down to 3.5. Dolphins under 4.5 they're doing, and the Bears under 9.5. They're expecting a little bit more regression out of Chicago this year after the great season they had last year.
One of the teams that you mentioned a little bit at the beginning, the Rams. Have you talked to anybody at BetMGM or otherwise what a potential adjustment would be, if any, if Aaron Donald decides to tell us that he's going to play?
That's a great question. I haven't asked about it yet, but I feel like it might. I mean, I'm just speculating a little bit here, but I feel like it's sort of reflected in how shaded, you know, in it being at over minus 140, going from 10.5 over minus 140 to 11.5 over minus 140. So kind of leaning toward that. I mean, I don't think it'll bump them to 12.5, but I feel like they're kind of shading it that way on the prospect of Aaron Donald coming back and further boosting that defense.
Patrick Everson with us up on X, Patrick E_Vegas, Vegas Insider, where you can get the reporting there. Their senior reporter for Vegas Insider. All right, let's talk about some awards in the National Football League. MVP, first and foremost, it's a quarterback's award. I like Joe Burrow a lot. I think a lot of people do, but have any tickets stuck out for that award?
Yes, I like Joe Burrow too, and it's interesting. Last year, John, in the preseason, and really even through the first few weeks of the season, even after he got hurt, Joe Burrow took so many preseason tickets at BetMGM that he led as the season kicked off, and he continued to lead, like I said, even for a few weeks after his injury, because so many people were keen on him. And they are keen on him again this year. The top ticket taker in BetMGM's NFL MVP odds, this is coming from Hal Eglin. He's a senior trader there, or a trading manager, I should say, with BetMGM. He's the top ticket taker, Joe Burrow is, followed by Caleb Williams of the Chicago Bears. You know, Josh Allen is the favorite, but not number one in either tickets or money. Nor is Jackson, with the Ravens, or Drake May with the Patriots, et cetera. Some of the other top players on the board. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Burrow is definitely a really popular play. Again, number one in tickets, and he's number two in money. He's behind, this is kind of interesting, Justin Herbert is number one in money. He's number three in tickets, number three in tickets, number one in money is Justin Herbert. Caleb Williams is definitely a popular play. I mean, it's a long ways back, John, but we hear this all the time. People remember what they see last, and what they're generally referring to in the NFL is what they saw last weekend. But in this case, last season, I mean, he had a really good season and a couple of very interesting and entertaining playoff performances. Even though they didn't get it done in the divisional round there, they had a couple of really entertaining games, and he led some comebacks and so forth. So he's popular too. He's sitting number two in tickets at BetMGM and number three in money.
Interesting difference there, right, when you looked at that, because you just told us Chicago, in terms of the win total, I think, right, if I remember correctly, was a little bit more popular to the under, and yet you get some popularity on Caleb Williams to win MVP. I feel like those two things don't really correlate with each other, so we'll see who comes out on top there. Patrick Everson with us. All right, what about Rookie of the Year? Because we actually opened the show with Offensive Rookie of the Year today, because I think the interesting theme with that award, Patrick, is there's a lot of injuries around some of the top names, and then one of the other top names is Fernando Mendoza, a guy who won't play, so maybe it's a market that's got some volatility. But what have you seen so far? What's been some of the reporting around that award market?
Yeah, I definitely think it could be volatile, to your point. And like you said, injuries could play a role. And again, this is coming from BetMGM, and Hal Eglin, one of my trading manager sources there, gave me a whole bunch of info a little bit earlier in the month here. And you know, I think Mendoza obviously is going to be interesting with Las Vegas, but it just depends on when he gets in. You know, it appears they're certainly not going to start the season with him, and you know how many games before he takes the helm, if he takes the helm. So that's certainly an interesting situation. As far as tickets and money at BetMGM, I thought this was kind of interesting. Seattle Seahawks running back Jadarian Price, who was the final pick of the first round, has the most tickets, which I think is interesting. And it kind of plays in a little bit to the, you know, to the injuries and roster changes that have occurred in the offseason, which has got him up there. But he's leading in tickets, followed by Mendoza. And then in money, you've got Tate number one in tickets, Price number two in money. Tate number one in money, Price number two in money, Mendoza number three in money. And again, a lot of this, you know, could stem on just how much action some of these players are going to see. But what Hal Eglin, again, with BetMGM said as far as liabilities and needs and so forth, Mendoza is one of the larger liabilities. But again, you just don't know how much he's going to play. Jeremiah Love, obviously getting solid support. But for BetMGM, he said that's actually a good result for us. He also thought, and I don't know if I'm on this wagon or not, John, but I just thought it was interesting. Carson Beck, he thinks, is another player worth mentioning. He's taking less total money than Mendoza, has much longer odds, so he'd actually be a worse result for BetMGM from a liability perspective. He somehow manages to break through and get some real playing time in his rookie season.
If there was a Carson Beck parade, I'd be near the forefront, because I have been kind of harping on that with Stormy for a while now, because they do think Beck is a little underrated. Mm-hmm. He was a projected first-round pick at one point, and at least before the rib injury, did look very good in the Hall of Fame game. All right, last 90 seconds with you here, Patrick. I will be selfish. I want to hear what's going on with the Premier League. I know you've got a couple of things. Season gets started this week, so anything notable when it comes to the Premier League futures?
Yes. So, look, first off, worth noting, very limited action in the pot at the moment. So it's not it's not overwhelming action. But so far, I think what's kind of interesting, Arsenal is the favorite and the defending champion. And darn near did the double with the Premier League and the Champions League, losing on a penalty kick shootout in the Champions League final about a week and a half after winning the EPL. But they're fourth in tickets. Man U is first, and Man U is the co-fourth choice at BetMGM at 8-1. Chelsea second in tickets, Liverpool third, then Arsenal fourth. But Arsenal is lapping the field in money. Again, not a lot in the pot, so maybe there's just a couple of big bets here, JVT, but taking 35% of all money in that market so far, more than double Manchester United, which is second in money. And then another quick thing that people might be interested in, BetMGM and others are offering a relegation market as well. Newcastle United, the overwhelming leader in tickets to be relegated after the 2026-27 season, taking 28% of all bets. It's only translates to 6.6% of money, but still, that's number two in money. The team taking the most money is only getting 5% of tickets. Coventry City, 80% of money to be relegated.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Football season is here, and the sharp money is already moving. Here's how the sharp plays sees it first. Exclusive data feeds from our four major sports books. Thousands of sharp bettors and professional syndicates tracked in real time before the market moves. All of it filtered and sorted by version 6.0 of their AI model. It's the machine, now the receipts. Every play logged, every result public. Records back to 2011, live log since 2021. It all feeds live, perform in its terminal. Check it out anytime. No logging, no paywall. Nobody else in the industry runs one because most records couldn't survive it. Sharp Plays record gets audited daily by their own haters. No steam chasing, no stale trends, no recycled plays. Follow the sharp money at sharpplays.com. It's JVT flying solo today. Stormy back in action tomorrow. She will be back. I was watching some training camp highlights, and Travis Kelce in one-on-one still shaking a kid out of his boots to get a completion. So maybe he still got something, but I would highly doubt it. Chiefs are going to be – they're coming up soon, right, in our training camp tour. Got like two stops left. I think it's Minnesota and then Kansas City, if I remember correctly, our map. Yep. So we'll have them, I should say, on Wednesday. I have messed up, though. Look, I'm by myself. I can only do so much. I apologize. Did forget to mention that we did have a game got started at about 10:40 a.m. Pacific time. It's a makeup from back on May 24th, but a low-scoring affair out there between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Cincinnati Reds. Cards up on top 2-1 over Cincinnati right now in action. Again, game one of a doubleheader, so we'll have another one coming up a little bit later in the day. Current in-game numbers for you with the Cardinals up 2-1 in the sixth. They are -250 favorites over at DraftKings, +213 coming back on the Reds. Total 5.5 shaded to the over at -126. So we'll keep our eye on that one in our last 29 minutes or so here on the show. But we do have a full slate of Major League Baseball. Before we get to those, though, I did want to note a couple of bits of news. If you're with us earlier, we hit our guy Jensen Lewis on these, but it's worth reiterating for our audience, if you missed it over a busy weekend, the Dodgers will start there, did place Justin Wroblewski on the injured list. Forearm inflammation is not something you really like to hear, but what an embarrassment of riches the Dodgers have when you have a guy like Wroblewski, who with 126 in the third inning so far this season, and by the way, he's probably approaching his previous career high of 132, and pitching as well as he has been, he probably doesn't have a spot in the Dodgers playoff rotation, but still, you know, when attrition starts to mount, which their pitching staff is starting to feel, even though Snell came back and he'll pitch a little bit later today, we'll talk about it momentarily, still just an injury worth noting here as the Dodgers are kind of on, well, we won't call it thin ice, but we'll call it back on their heels, given the way they've been playing for about the last near month or so. From what we've seen from the offense. But Dave Roberts noted to the media, not concerned, and that the stint should be, quote, short-lived on the injured list. But Wroblewski on the IL, forearm inflammation is the issue. Dansby Swanson, he left the loss to the aforementioned St. Louis Cardinals the other day. It's a side injury, side discomfort. It's expected to be an oblique issue, which could mean Swanson sits out the rest of the season. And that's a loss now for the Chicago Cubs, obviously, for a team that many are buying in on. Now, Swanson, from an offensive standpoint, you're really not going to miss much. He's hitting .216. He's got 18 dongs, 66 ribs, so there is something there. But it's a loss to a defense, which, if you look at many different defensive metrics, the Cubs are at the top of the National League and on top of Major League Baseball as a whole. Dropped the series to the Cardinals. They're 1-3 in their last four games. I don't think there's going to be a tumultuous drop post-Swansby injury, but it's just worth noting that Dansby Swanson, not Swansby, Swanson is going to be on the IL. The left side discomfort is the issue, but some thought that maybe it could be the rest of the regular season. So we'll keep an eye on that as the Cubs have just under 40 games left to be played. And then the A's, this has been an injury-riddled season for at one point was a very deep and talented lineup. Another one, they lose Tyler Soderstrom to the injured list with a hip injury. He's hitting .245 with 19 homers and 56 RBI in 109 games. Already playing without Nick Hurts, already playing without Shea Langeliers, and an A's team that has fallen to the cellar of the American League West. Not all the way there. My Angels still have something to say about it, but still, big injuries nonetheless coming out of Major League Baseball's weekend. With that, let's hit the National League. We've got a lot going on in these contests. Miami Marlins on the road against Philadelphia Phillies will start here. Phillies are going to send out Christopher Sanchez. Jansen Junk will oppose him here. Phillies right now -241 over here at Circa, about a 6-point bump or 6-cent bump, I should say, from the opener. 8 shaded to the over at -115 was your opener between these two, pretty much where you sit right now. Junk, a 4.41 ERA so far on the season. What you see is what you get. But the last time out, performed pretty well. Last start against Pittsburgh, 6 innings pitched, 4 hits and an earned run. Struck out 2, walked 1. Hasn't allowed more than 2 earned runs at a start over his last 4 outings. And over those 4, a 1.93 ERA. 3.79 expected in the 3.03 FIP will tell you, there's probably something coming here. He's probably not pitching as well as some of the numbers would indicate. And we know exactly what he is. My man is he's going to pitch to contact. 61 batted balls over that span, 4 barrels, 23 of them hard hit. So a hard hit rate that's been relatively solid. But if you're going to continue to give up contact and maybe to some of these talented lineups, that's going to be something you're going to pay for. And the Phillies had a stretch where they were struggling to score. But over the weekend, both in the Field of Dream games and just in the series in Minnesota as a whole, Phillies kind of woke up a little bit. 23 runs, hit .306 over those games against the Twins, 5 home runs as well. And then you get Sanchez, who has really rounded into form on the road against St. Louis last time out. 6 innings pitched, 4 hits, no earned runs, struck out 7, didn't walk a single batter. Over his last 6 starts, in 5 of them, he's allowed fewer than 2 earned runs. Last 6 overall, 2.29 ERA, 3.64 expected. He struck out 30% of the batters he has faced and walked just 7, and really minimal contact numbers. You can understand not only the heavy price on them, but also the fact that they've been bet up a little bit here against Junk and the Marlins. I think the Phillies, given the offensive form and the way that Sanchez has been pitching, that you can get it, at least when you're looking at the overnight at -235 and expecting maybe there is some value in that and pushing that to near .250. We'll see if it gets a little bit higher than that. Let's go to San Diego on the road against the New York Mets. Walker Buehler, Nolan McClain will oppose one another here. Buehler, just checking to see if there's been any changes. Yeah, Buehler, 4.88 ERA, 4.35 expected. for the season. Last start was solid. A one earned run over the course of six innings pitched to give up three hits to Milwaukee, five strikeouts and two walks. It was his first time pitching six innings since June 3rd, so a lengthy outing for Buehler that we have not seen in recent form. He hasn't allowed more than 300 runs in a start since July 11th, and in his last five, he's got a 320 ERA, 379 expected. Here's the thing with Buehler, though. I mean, he's been working around some trouble. It's the Mets, so maybe you can continue to do this, but it's not exactly a profile that leaves you a lot to be desired, even over the course of these five games that we're starting, these five starts, I should say, that he has pitched relatively well. He's striking out fewer than 20% of the batters that he's facing. He's walking more than 10% of the batters he's facing. That's not really a good combination, even with some of the expected numbers. And the hard hit rates and just the contact numbers in general have been really good for Buehler. So he's going to continue to limit hard contact, even with the free passes he's giving and the lack of strikeouts. You can continue to kind of walk the edge. But I don't know if that's really something worth gravitating towards here at this point. McClain on the other side, last start on the road against Atlanta, performed really well. Six innings, one hit, a solo shot was the lone blemish. Three strikeouts to two walks. So you'd like to see a little bit more of a growing valley between strikeouts and walks. But still, he's allowed two runs or fewer in seven of eight. Look at these eight starts from McClain. 228 ERA, 386 expected. Getting a little lucky if you wanted to make the case, right? Batting average of balls in play is 283. He's an interesting dude, man. Like, if you look at some of the swing and miss stuff, 25th percentile in chase rates. So he's not getting guys to chase out of the zone. 46th percentile in whiff rate. So very average when he's challenging hitters in the zone. And yet, 85th percentile in strikeout rate. So maybe if a team can be patient, sit on some of those balls outside of the zone and get walks, drive with the count, if that's going to be the case. San Diego is a team, though, that likes to get aggressive. 11th highest strike, or excuse me, swinging rate on pitches outside of the zone. But still, can maybe be pretty patient, drive up the count, walk rate of 9.2%. Overnight, we saw this open at minus 116 in favor of the Mets. Now we're looking at this about minus 118. So there's something there. But I do think that looking at this relatively accurately priced for the New York Mets, didn't really see a big edge here. Lean a little bit toward McClain. You can understand why the market kind of pushed this up a bit. Easy analysis, I would think, here. Dodgers and Rockies. I know we talked about this with our guy, Jensen Lewis. Hard to make the case for the Colorado Rockies here, given it's Tomoyuki Sugano on the hill. And that's where I want to start, because Jensen mentioned this when we talked to him in the first hour, which, by the way, if you missed out on any part of the show, check out Money Moves, wherever you get your podcasts, as well as VSiN Best Bets. Like, rate, review, subscribe. It would be greatly appreciated. But Sugano on the season, 4.43 ERA, 6.87 expected ERA, a 5.41 fielding independent. Insane when you look at some of the numbers. And we've talked about Sugano and how poorly he has pitched. Jensen mentioned, though, that he's been pitching pretty well. And the hard numbers are that he has. Last start at Arizona for Sugano, six innings pitched, six hits, two earned runs, both of them coming of a courtesy of a solo shot, five strikeouts and no walks. He has not allowed more than three earned runs in his last five starts. However, over those five starts for Sugano, a 6.33 expected ERA, a 5.71 fielding independent. He's allowed eight home runs in 29 and a third over that stretch. The hard contact numbers and just the contact numbers in general are troubling. He's got a barrel rate over this stretch of over 12.5% and a hard hit rate of over 40%. He has been getting away with giving up contact and home runs, hard contact at that. If there was a lineup that was going to make him pay for it, it'd probably be the Dodgers, who are minus 265 on the road here at DraftKings. And then you get Snell on the other side as well. Second start since returning from injury. His start back against Kansas City, six innings pitched, a single earned runs, 10 strikeouts to one walk. Hard not to make the case that the Dodgers could come out here and make him pay, Sugano that is, for all of his sins. So we'll see if that's the case. The circle line move, open minus 235 on the overnight. We're at minus 257. I think that makes sense. Like, if you wanted to add the Dodgers, if you don't want to lay that, but I do think that Sugano has been kind of getting away with a lot of nonsense. And so if the Dodgers wanted to come out here, team total aspect of it, you could do that too, but or total earned runs for Sugano as well. But I do think that there's somewhat of a fraudulence with Sugano in the way that he's been pitching as of late. All right, we'll hit the American League. We'll hit some of the other stuff that we have too. It's a breaking news, update scores, and more before we wrap up and get out of here. Follow the Money's coming up in 20 minutes.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
1 week from today, we'll be in week zero for college football. The NFL regular season right behind it. Now is the time to get your edge with a VSiN Pro subscription. Join VSiN Pro today. Get instant access to both our college football and NFL betting guides, packed with team previews, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from VSiN's top analysts. And that's just a start. You're also going to get daily best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools and matchup analysis, plus 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Start today for just $9.99. So if you're not in yet, you want to see what's going on, just check it out. 30-day offer, $9.99. Receive 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Sign up now at vsin.com/subscribe. That is vsin.com/subscribe. We have some notes to get to in Major League Baseball. A lot of interesting news, not really for this show because not really like a ton of betting implications from it, but pretty interesting financial transactions going on in the world of sports. Historic one, nonetheless. Sounds like the Buss family, according to Shyam Charania, has decided they're out. They are selling the remainder of their stake in the Los Angeles Lakers, and so they'll be out. This is all going to Iger and that group too, Kushner. So the Lakers are going to have new management yet again, and this time an overhaul in terms of the ownership group for the Los Angeles Lakers. We'll see what that means for them in the big picture, but just some interesting news there. And I think the story of the day in the association, again, like, ripple effects are going to be from a betting standpoint, but that's just because we're waiting for this trade to go through. But it was reported today by ESPN that the NBA has found that there was no evidence of wrongdoing for Ballmer. In fact, the way to put it, no evidence Ballmer funneled money to Leonard via sponsors. This means a couple of different things, but the important point here is that the NBA has come out, not really refuted the report, but said there are some inaccuracies and that the investigation will be over soon. ESPN has come out and stood by the reporting, so we'll see what ultimately comes from this. But remember, the Kawhi Leonard to Toronto trade has not happened yet, because the Raptors have said they want to wait to see what some of the punishment, if there will be any, for Kawhi Leonard. So that's what we're waiting for. But the two LA teams in the center of the news for the association, as we have an ownership change again in Los Angeles, and we have potentially some reporting that says there will be no punishment, no evidence showing that no evidence has been shown that Ballmer funneled money to Kawhi Leonard. So with that, I wanted to wrap with a couple of different things. But first off, we were on Major League Baseball. I had just two more notes on the AL games today. So I wanted to hit those really quickly if we could. Let's go to Baltimore and Tampa Bay. Nothing crazy here. Just wanted to note Shane McClanahan is going to be back from IL. Missed some time with a back injury for the Rays today. 309 ERA on the season, but very good. 412 expected ERA, a little bit of a difference there. Brandon Young on the other side, he's been pretty solid. Last start, six innings pitched, six hits, one earned run, four strikeouts, three walks. So a little bit of walk syndrome there, a little lack of command. Two-plus walks in his last four starts each. So you don't really love that. A 19% strikeout rate with an 8.4% walk rate. Not really a good combination. Rays opened up as a $1.50 favorite on the overnight, $1.55. And right now, about $1.56. So no real big change there. 7.5 shaded to the over at -120. Your current price there, pretty much where you opened as well. And then the Athletics and the Royals. I mentioned just the lack of pop now in this lineup. But even given all the injuries, it's a pretty interesting pitching matchup for a couple of different reasons, just a game in general. First off, really shorthanded lineup for the Athletics, obviously, given the news today that Soderstrom is on the injured list. So he joins a cavalcade of guys from this lineup that are not playing. But Mason Barnett is going to get the start for the Athletics. It's his 18th appearance of the season, fourth consecutive start. Things just have not gone well for Barnett at all. As a starter, 8.78 ERA. 4.91 expected. His FIP is at over 9 at this point right now. Confidence is shot. He's given up 6 home runs in these 3 starts that he has made. It's a home run to fly ball ratio of 28.6%. Think about that. Over a quarter of the fly balls that you are allowing are leaving the park. It has almost been just pure bad luck. All 6 of the home runs we're talking about here over his last 2 starts, 10 hits, 6 homers. He's walking 11% of the hitters he's faced, espousing some lack of confidence as well. And this is all despite the fact that he's got a hard hit rate of just 30%. So this has been pretty rough for Barnett. It has been brutal to watch as well. Waka, I mean, look, he's been fine. You know exactly what you get when it comes to Waka. On the road against the Dodgers last time out, 6 2/3 innings pitched, 7 hits, 3 earned runs. Got taken deep there once, 5 strikeouts to no walks. If you wanted to dig a little bit deeper, some pretty interesting home numbers for Waka, a 2.91 ERA, but a fielding independent of 4.21. So maybe at some point he's going to get got. Worth noting, though, because this is what stuck out, was $1.95 plus 174 price on Waka and the Royals. Even given both Barnett and the addition of Soderstrom to the IL, seemed really, really strong for the Royals, considering what we know about them. And if there was a lineup that maybe Barnett could fix some of what ails him, we should say, that this would maybe be the lineup to do it, or at least have a better chance at doing that, a better probability of doing that. And sure enough, we've seen the market come back here on the Athletics today, so I think it makes some sense. We do have some interesting non-conference interleague matchups as well. Let's go to Detroit really quickly, because this one is going to be fun. Detroit and Pittsburgh, two teams that are trying to find themselves in the midst of a race for a wild card. We saw this open up -116 in favor of Detroit, +104 coming back on Pittsburgh on the overnight here at Circa. Eight the total at the open, pretty much where we stand right now. Ole Miss team versus LSU team is going to look like. I do think you're looking at this and saying, yeah, Alabama, Oklahoma, maybe your other two teams outside of Georgia and Texas to make it to the college football playoff. Over -155. I think there's a lot of confidence here in the market that the SEC is going to get these four teams. I think you're probably right where you should be with these groups at this point right now. But going through this exercise and talking about some of the college football playoff teams potentially out of some of these conferences, the two things that really stuck out to kind of put a bow on what we were talking about in the first hour is, one, in the Big 12, if you do think that that conference can go over 1.5 teams in the college football playoff, then you're definitely, I think, looking at BYU to make the CFP at about like a +355. And then on the other side here, the SEC, I think you're looking at something when it comes to these teams and saying that, yeah, you could probably play over 3.5, but I think reality is you're probably looking to play some tickets on some of the teams, specifically like an Oklahoma that can make it in here. Their schedule does have some opportunities. At Michigan and Georgia, I think the Michigan game's a little bit easier than it looks like on paper. I like this Oklahoma team, especially if Mateer starts to take a step forward. But the other parts of this, home games against Texas, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and if I'm right, that Texas A&M ain't going to be as good, and that Ole Miss is not going to be as good. Oklahoma, I think, has a higher probability than the market says to make it in. And so instead of going over 1.5, maybe just playing Oklahoma to make the college football playoff is potentially the way to go there. All right, with that, remember, Stormy will be back tomorrow, so we'll get some thoughts on those Week 0 games as we're inching closer and closer to the Week 0 matchups. We'll also have some NFL preseason line movement that we have to get to as well. That's going to be a pretty big deal at the start of the week. You want to get to some of those press conferences early and see some of the information before some of those lines move as well. And we'll have our team of the day, Minnesota Vikings. It's going to be her first day back, but I would assume that Stormy and I are going to argue about that because I think she's relatively high on Kyler Murray and the Vikings. Money Moves, all done, but follow the money. Coming up next, Mitch Moss makes his glorious return. He and Paul Howard up on decks. Paul Stone is going to join with a breakdown of the MAC and his best bets for Week 0. We'll talk to you tomorrow.